Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Welcome, you're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, Tim Dennis. Hello, Tim.
Hello.
Got a great show lined up for you. I know we say that a lot. I mean it. We have some great guests that we're able to get for this program, and I think that people are going to really be profoundly touched by today's episode. And listen, folks, I want to tell you, we're making it as easy as pie for you. Many of you write to me afterwards and ask, well, how do you get the books? We mention the books repeatedly on the show. And I guess you guys want us to make it easier. So we're going to make it as easy as pie. Go to darknessradio.com. Click on our store tab. When you go into that store tab, you'll see our Amazon storefront. You can click that. It'll take you in. We have books separated by our true crime and by our paranormal themes. There's also gift items that you can choose from. So there's a couple of different categories. But if you want one of the books you hear featured on today's show, just click on the tab for the paranormal books. It'll take you in. You'll find the book there, and you can order it directly through our shop. And that way you can kind of scan through, see all the other books that we've covered, and look for those items directly through our shop. We've made it as easy as we possibly can. And then please do us and our guests the favor that if you do buy their books, rate and review them, because it does go a long way to help expose them to a bigger, broader audience by the more people that take the time to rate and review. We know many of you love to read the books and will rant about it on social media, which is great, but it actually helps them more if you just go in there for a few minutes, give them their star rating and a little blurb, and that will help out these authors so that they can continue to do these great works and that we can find them to have them on the show. Today, Beyond Ever After, a heart-to-heart journey through death and the afterlife, joining us on today's program, Catherine Weisenberg. For several decades, Catherine has been sharing her unique ability to communicate and dialogue with God, the deceased, and coma patients, to retain a lasting record of these communications. Catherine writes the conversations longhand as they occur, calling them writings. Although intimate to the recipient, the writings are beautiful in their imagery and metaphor, often involving universal themes of self-growth, interpersonal relationships, and life changes. And she is very grateful to serve others by facilitating the transmission of spirit wisdom and healing energy. Joining us also on today's program, Jocelyn Montanaro. Jocelyn has spent most of her life in California, but she was educated on the East Coast and in Europe. She has a bachelor's degree in international studies and a law degree. For many years prior to writing Beyond Ever After, Jocelyn was a lawyer working with divorcing couples, criminal defendants, and in general litigation. She also helped Kevin in his very successful legal mediation practice. Jocelyn is an avid reader, but never imagined being an author, and with some surprise and apprehension, as the selected messenger, she welcomes the reader into her story of her life just before and after Kevin's death. Jocelyn recognizes this responsibility she has in sharing with others this story of love beyond ever after. Ladies, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
This is a remarkable story, and I've got to be honest with you, Catherine, if you don't mind, we start with you for just a few moments.
Sure.
We've talked to many different people, and the concept of coma has been intriguing to me. Not alive, not dead, not asleep, in kind of a different state of consciousness that even science doesn't seem to fully comprehend. And I've spoken to facilitators and mediums, to even hypnotherapists, asking, is there a way to communicate with people in comas? And I've gotten varied answers, and none have actually ever worked on doing that. So when we saw this part of the story, this really lit me up, as many of our listeners have followed us on our nearly 14-year journey of asking these type of questions. Now, it's interesting to me that in the write-up it says that you don't consider yourself a channel or a medium. Yet what I just read about you sounds very mediumistic and like a channel in a way. Can you explain to me, Catherine, maybe a little bit better than what exactly are you doing and how are you getting this information?
Well, how I experience it is that I experience that there's energy all around us. I mean, we live in a sea of energy. And I have this concept of, to describe it, as it's a stream of consciousness. It's energy. And for whatever reason, I'm able to put my hand in it or my mind in it or my spirit in it, and I can connect. And it's just like I can pull information. And I say not a medium and not a channel because the way in which I get information is full dialogue. I think a lot of mediums and channels do sort of a different thing. And I don't use those kinds of services, but surely I have a lot of clients who do. And this is like a dialogue. And as you see in the book, there's the full-on conversation where Jocelyn can ask Kevin, while he's in a coma, what's the last thing you remember? And they can connect back and forth. So I sort of think that I am more a conduit than, and that's why I'm a facilitator. I have a master's in communication. I was in graduate school studying communication when this gift started happening. So
How did it begin to awaken in you, Catherine? I mean, you're in graduate school of anything. That seems like the time you'd be most distracted and unable to notice these gifts coming.
Completely. Absolutely, that's true, in a rigorous program. And actually what happened is I had a friend that I was in school with, and her sister moved here from New York, and she was an actress. And one night we were at their parents' house, and they were house-sitting for their parents, and they're grown women, of course. And the New Yorker said, well, I've got an idea. Why don't we try out a Ouija board? And I'm like, what? And she said, yeah, well, why don't we try making a Ouija board? And we're like, oh, all right, okay, you know, whatever. And she made a homemade one out of a glass and some legal paper she cut into squares. And, you know, we were just sitting there. Nothing much happened. And then we tried it another time, and the glass moved around. And I told one of my fellow colleagues in my grad program, I said, you know, it's just kind of silly, little stupid thing, this game, you know. And I'm like, did you ever play that? I didn't play it as a girl. And she's like, well, I like to see that, you know. So she came over, and she, being the good social scientist that we were being trained to be, she said, this is only moving when your finger's on the glass. She said, why are you sending people through this? And she handed me a tablet and said, just write it down. And thus began that. Never played the Ouija board after that. And
so you essentially became the Ouija board.
I guess.
Right.
Not a medium or a channel, not really, but maybe a mobile Ouija board. I don't know. You could be onto something.
All right. So you start to develop this and realize this. How do you, and I mean, obviously you're going to college, you understand you're an intelligent human being. And I'm not saying people that haven't attended college are not intelligent,
right,
but you know, rationale. How are you separating this in your mind that all of a sudden I'm getting messages from the ether?
I was getting messages like, go up to people in restaurants and say this to him, and I'd be like, oh, no, oh, my gosh, you know, this is ridiculous. And it'd be kind of like a kid pulling on your sleeve, say it, and I'd go up, you know, finally and say, excuse me, I'm sorry to interrupt your lunch, but the blue car under the trundle bed, and people would start crying. They'd start having reactions. I didn't have any understanding what any of it meant. The people that were seated with them would look at me and the person, and I'd be like, okay, bye, because I was so embarrassed. And there was a whole host of gifts that came. I always say it's kind of, and even now 30 years in, it's like a pop-out room. I don't think I can do this, and then this gift, this aspect of the gift comes. So I was thinking it was the devil because, you know, what do you think? And then I was also, as you said, smart enough to know I can't get total strangers to collude in my insanity. So I actually went to Appleton, Wisconsin to meet some man who would later in life had become a healer, and he didn't show up, and all of a sudden I started doing what I do, and I thought, okay, I'll never be able to explain how this works, but it's happening, and I have to have peace around it. And so, and you know, and after 30 years of thousands of experiences, you know, I just say whatever, do whatever, and just try to be of service. So
this gift, has it ever and ever truly been something that you wish you could get away from and shut down?
No. I mean, I've been embarrassed. I've been reluctant. But it's all been me. No one that I've ever worked with or approached or shared my gift with has had any negative or bad reaction, been nothing but loving and embracing. And it's just, I think it's like all things that we have, all gifts we have, sometimes we're the ones that want to shy away. But no, I, other than my human, oh no, because it's wonderful, because I live in a magical world. I mean, I have events that happen to me, you know,
but
with
when did you,
a lot of regularity.
You know, writing these information and getting this detailed information, when did you realize that you were connecting with God? If you're saying there's this universal kind of energy,
well,
there's
the
a difference
first,
that and then
yeah, the
God.
Yeah. The first times on the Ouija board, it was no name. And then all the writings, all my connection starts out with welcome God. And it always ends with go with God. And so you have to understand, in that time, there were like the CB Raiders. Radio is breaker, breaker. This is God. And I just thought, okay, you know, and that's always the description. And that's always my entree into a session. And then I say people drop in. That's how I describe them. Then if there's a deceased person or a peace person in a coma, they just sort of drop in. And that energy is very different from God, from the God energy.
Now, you realize, and you have to realize this, the listeners around the world are listening. They go, she got it from a Ouija board. She opened conduit. She believes it's God. It's Satan. It's something worse that's getting this information. We've been led down that path.
Sure.
That Ouija board does nothing but bring about darkness.
Sure.
And shame. What was the corroborating bits for listeners that are skeptical that told you that this was God and not something masking?
Well, you know, I thought it was the devil too. So when this started, my really good friend said, "Well, you know, I have these two priests and their psychologists, because I thought I'm either losing my mind or the devil's taking me over. I don't know what's happening, and I'm highly functional. I'm excelling in a graduate program." But I talked to them, and I said, you know, this is what happens, and I'm scared, and, you know, I just don't want to be letting any dark forces. And then they opened up the Bible, and they started showing me passages, and they said, oh, these are gifts of the Spirit. And they showed me these things, and then they said, you know, and I said, well, I don't know. And they said, well, how you judge these things is by their fruit. So if they help people, you know they're from God. And if you see any bad or ill effects coming, you'll know they're from some darker source, and stop doing them. And I thought, stop doing them. I didn't even do anything to start them. That's how I've worked ever since under that premise. And people have transformational healings. And it's never... the information's never detrimental. It may be, you may get called out on your bad pattern of behavior or something you need to shake. But it always is helpful. So that's how I know it's from God. And
great answer. Yeah, that's what I've told people often when they tell me, oh, mediums are of the devil. I said, well, then the devil obviously didn't read the Bible and what he's supposed to be doing, because most of these mediumistic moments and these messages are always of love and kindness and forgiveness. And when you're hearing messages like this, you're able to help translate these messages and share them. I've never understood where people come up with the concept that it has to be from something evil. I'm sure that there are aspects of it that do, and some of these energies will then start to manipulate, play themselves off as loving and caring and a family member, and then turn to something different. But that seems to be the rarity as opposed to the regularity of what people are actually connecting with. Now, we'll introduce Jocelyn in just a moment here, but coma patients, what is your perception, Catherine, of what the conscious state really is doing at that point?
Well, and since I've done so many of these, and also people who are deceased who talk about when they're supposedly on their deathbed, unconscious in a coma, they hear you. They know what's going on, by and large. I think that our consciousness is so much vaster than what we know. And I think that for whatever reason, like I said, I have an antenna that I can connect into other states of consciousness. But I think it's just another state. And in our book, Beyond Ever After, readers will find that Kevin thought he was dreaming. He didn't know he was in a coma until Jocelyn alerted him to that. He thought he was dreaming. So when we dream, we don't wake ourselves up. We get up in the morning. I don't, maybe you, Tim or Dave, think I want to get up at 6 tomorrow. But in general, we just always wake up every morning of our lives. We don't do anything special. And I think that coma people don't always know they're in a quote-unquote coma. So they're not activating that part that Kevin was when he was able to wake himself up after 26 days in a coma. I think it's another level of consciousness. I know people here, many people here, because after they're dead, they report deathbed goodbyes to their loved ones through my work. And so they hear everything. They know a lot of what's going on. So, and in many times they're in even a heightened state of awareness than you or I, because we're so distracted by life. Oh, there went the cat, you know, or whatever. So
that's powerful. Are spirits, the soul, whatever you want to refer to it, of a human in a coma, are they free to traverse outside of their physical form, or are they always there? It's just their consciousness is at a different level.
Well, there's an example in our book Jocelyn can tell you about, where Kevin apparently must have been, you know, he was, like you see in the movies, you know, an apparition going out of his body. But he definitely had awareness of things that he was not physically present nearby to know. And a lot of the near-death people have those kinds of experiences, too. So I don't know. I just think that once we're out of this linear 3D reality, kind of once those frameworks can expand, that we are so much more able and possible to do things that we, in our way, have shut our minds down to, just by believing that we can't, you know? I mean, we learned how to ride a bike. We didn't think we could. We had somebody holding the back of the seat, and then we took off. And I think consciousness probably has that same thing. And when you're in a coma, maybe you just are in expanded consciousness. I'm not an expert. I just have had a lot of very interesting experiences.
Well, we're going to hear from Jocelyn and some of this. But, Tim, before that, I think it's time we wake people up out of the coma that they're in with cable, Dish TV. It's time to go to Pluto TV, folks. Wake up out of the haze that you're in. Stop paying for television. Pluto TV is the leading free streaming television service where you can watch over 100 TV channels and thousands of movies on demand, all for free. No credit card ever needed and no sign up. Pluto TV is the easy and completely legal way to watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies. So what are you waiting for? Never pay for TV again. Download Pluto TV for free on all of your favorite devices today. Your telephone, your Roku, your Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, smart TVs, PlayStations. Heck, anywhere that you can download a stream, do it. Take advantage of Pluto TV. Cut the bonds that tie you to high prices and get free TV the way it should be. Go check it out for yourself. Pluto TV. All right, we are back, and this, what a powerful story. Joining us now, Jocelyn, and is it Montanaro? Am I saying that right, Jocelyn?
Yes, Montanaro, that's correct. Thank you.
Jocelyn, coming from your background, I'm curious, how did you end up connecting with Catherine?
Well, Catherine was a friend of my sister's and had done several writings for her over the years, which she had taken great comfort from, and helped with the trajectory of her life. And when my husband was in a coma, she said to me several times, "You should, you know, have a writing with Catherine." And I just said, "No." I mean, if there was a God, I was really pissed off. And then she said, "Well, she can just pray with you." And I said, "Oh, for God's sake, no!" You know, I didn't want to pray. I'd been praying like crazy, even though I'm not religious, and my husband was just getting sicker and sicker and sicker and sicker. But finally, after 26 days in a coma, I didn't know what to do. I was all out of hope. I was all out of ideas. He was supposed to go into surgery and wake up and he didn't. And
Could you tell us, back it up a little bit, just so we know and our listeners can follow along. What had happened? Was it a regular surgery, a run-of-the-mill kind of thing, or was he dealing with something that was more devastating? What can you tell us about that?
Well, he was dealing with something more devastating, and I don't want to give it all away, but he had a brain cancer. And he had brain cancer, and then before this time with Catherine, 3.5 years before is when he was initially diagnosed, and he had a surgery to remove the tumor and then radiation and chemotherapy, and he was fine for a while. But they told us that primary brain cancer always comes back. It's not an if, it's a when. And so it did come back, and we went in for another surgery to take out what they could, knowing at this point that he had about a year left. He had glioblastoma, which, as some of you may know, is the most aggressive form of brain cancer. And so we went in to get the surgery to remove some of the tumor with the thought that it would make the last year of his life better. And in the recovery room, an artery tore in his head. And so then he had a massive hemorrhagic stroke. And they went back in to try to fix that. And then he had bleeding in his brain, so they were putting drains in. And then he had shunts. And it was just like one catastrophe after another. I mean, everything. Single thing that could have gone wrong did. And here I was living at the UCLA hospital with him, sleeping in the same bed with him at the ICU, just waiting for him to wake up, and it wasn't happening. And the doctors kept trying different things. He'd had 5 surgeries and procedures in a month, and they just didn't know why he wasn't waking up. They couldn't figure it out. And so, being all out of hope, my sister, I think, timed it correctly and said, "Look, just give it a go." And I thought, you know, what have I got to lose? But I was really against it because for a lot of reasons. One, I am a very direct experience person. I wasn't a religious person. I'm a lawyer by training. And just in general, I'm pretty skeptical. But my husband was very religious. And I didn't think that he would want me to do something like this. So for a lot of reasons, I didn't do it. But I finally just thought, you know, what have I got to lose? And so I did the first writing with Catherine, and after an initial God introduction, which was beautiful, short, they got longer as the writings went on, but it was all about the veil of consciousness, and Catherine can explain that more to you, but we started this writing, and after the God intro, she says, I feel a man's energy. And I said, is it Kevin? And then he says, of course it's me. And I said, where are you? You know, what's happening? And he, like Catherine said, thought he was dreaming, and he had no idea that he was in a coma. He just thought he was in a post-anesthesia dream. And I didn't, you know, then he asked me about the kids. He named the kids and said, what are they doing? And I thought, well, you know, I don't really know Catherine. I'd met her before at a game night at my sister's house, but I didn't really know her. And I knew what she thought she could do. I didn't think too highly of her. I got to tell you, you know, someone who says they can communicate with dead people, I just figured she was a charlatan. And right. When I met her, I thought she would have like this long caftan on and bangles on her wrist and smell like patchouli and incense, but she didn't. She was just like me. You know, she was very much like me. Same.
A mom driving a minivan.
We're a mom driving a minivan, a little too heavy mom driving a minivan, both of us. So
well,
anyway, well, no, but you know, we're moms in our 50s. So, so I thought, well, she could have heard from my sister what my kids' names were and the few general things he had just said. And so I said, well, what's the last thing you remember? It was kind of a test. And he said, I remember getting wheeled into surgery and reaching up and taking Linda's hand and saying, thank you for doing this, Linda. And I nearly fell off my chair. Because I might have even fallen off my chair, because after the brain surgery, you know how the doctors will come out and tell you how it went to the family and when you're in the waiting room. And the surgeon came out and she said, you know, everything's fine. And she said, but before I get into the details, I got to tell you, your husband is the nicest man. As we were reeling him in, he reached up and grabbed my hand and said, thank you for doing this, Linda. And I was just floored, because the only person that heard that were my two kids. And then right after that happened in the recovery room, everything went south, and I just never repeated it to anyone, because why would I? It was off my radar. There was bigger things in my head, very typical of something he would say. Didn't surprise me at all that he said it. But when he conveyed that was the last thing he remembered, I knew it was him. I knew I was talking to Kevin. And from that point on, when you read the book, which I hope you do, you'll see it's just a very much a back and forth conversation. It's not I see a man who's saying this or feeling this. It's like, he's like, you know, what is happening and why aren't you doing this? And why, you know, you have to, it's very specific, very, very, just like I'm talking to you. And that just was the beginning of the next phase of my relationship with Kevin, and the beginning of kind of my personal transformation too.
All right. I need to know, Jocelyn. I mean, you're an attorney, right?
Things
predicated on fact. And like you said, I love the fact that you went into this, oh God, she's going to look like Stevie Nicks and smell like patchouli oil, right? And it's going to all be this metaphysical woo-woo nonsense, but that she's hitting on this. I mean, how quick a full stop does your brain do when you are there and actually seeing this unfold in front of you?
Well, we were on the telephone, we might say. I was in Washington State on vacation, so we weren't even together. We were on a phone call like this.
I understand, but what is that
Catherine
like?
Doesn't need to be next to you.
Okay.
Oh, you know what? I've never in my life had a moment where my heart stopped like that. And I felt this like, you know, chill wave go over me, because it just meant that everything I thought about everything was not what I thought. And I did an instant, I mean, I knew it was Kevin. I knew it, but you know, afterwards I didn't really share it with, I talked to a few of my friends about it and they didn't buy it. And they said, you know, if that gave you some comfort, you know, that's really good. And I said, no, you don't get it. It was Kevin. And they're looking at me like I've been sniffing glue because they know me. And they know that I just am not a drink the Kool-Aid kind of a person. And I had just done this complete turnaround. I knew it was Kevin.
Wow, that's got to be just a life-altering moment. And that he was this cognizant coming through to you this way, talking to you this way. Now, that's one thing. This is your husband, okay? Somebody you know, you're getting information that you can corroborate. But God message, when you're getting something like that, what is, you know, is your radar pinging? And Catherine, this isn't an attack on you. I want you to know.
Oh, no.
For our listeners, people want to know this. When she's, I've got a message God and coming through. That's a pretty big statement, especially knowing that your husband was so religious in this mindset. How did you process that?
Well, you know, it's funny because the God part to me, it's really the most significant part of the story. But for me, during this whole time, it was all about Kevin. You know, that other stuff I didn't care about. It was all about Kevin. And when in the writings, it's not just, you know, a communication from him. It's them. They have the same grammar. They have the same sense of humor. They use the same nicknames. You know, he said, you know, come on, Joss, which is what he called me, Joss, not Jocelyn. And it's just incredible. It's just so specific to you. You know, it's that. And it just puts your whole world on end because something is happening that can't possibly be happening. I mean, he was in the ICU, hooked up to tubes and hadn't woken up at all. And just, you know, out and drugged too. You know, we'd had 5 brain surgeries in a month. He was under a tremendous amount of pain medications and all these other kinds of things. But during that writing, something miraculous happened, which it's okay with you. I'll pass it on to Catherine about what happened.
We'll do that when we return. Stay tuned, kids. There's a lot more to hear right here on the best in Paranormal Talk Radio. You're listening to Beyond the Darkness. I'm so excited to be welcoming Hot Boxing with Mike Tyson to the Podcast One family. Listen as Mike Tyson, the baddest man on the planet, pours his soul into conversations with fascinating minds, celebrities, and athletes. Along with his cosmic millennial sidekick and former NFLer, Eben Britton, Kid Dynamite dives deep into the issues impacting us all today. This podcast will change the way you see the world. Don't miss Hot Boxing with Mike Tyson every week on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Beyond the Darkness.
We're back. This is Beyond the Darkness. Today, we're taking you even further. Beyond Ever After, a heart-to-heart journey through death and the afterlife. Our guests today, Catherine Weisenberg, Jocelyn Montanaro, and we're speaking about probably one of the more powerful stories of love transcending than I've heard in a long time, if not ever. Now, just before the break, Jocelyn, you threw to Catherine, who you believe can even take this a little deeper. So, Catherine, please, where shall we go next?
So what I was going to say is that Jocelyn's described Kevin's condition, but during that conversation on the phone, that first session, Kevin roused himself to consciousness. And he was ingenious, which gets back to the heart of the coma idea, in that he said, if I'm not dreaming, then tap my finger. He believed he was dreaming, and Jocelyn kept trying to say, no, you're not dreaming. I wish you were dreaming. And he's like, no, I'm just in a post-anesthetic dream.
Let me interrupt Catherine for a second. He goes, and I think this is just me in my dream talking to you in my dream.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So go ahead.
So more that they're kind of in a dream state. Thanks, Jocelyn. And anyway, so he conducted an experiment. He said, let's conduct an experiment, or let's do an experiment. And at the time I was on the phone with Jocelyn, I thought Jocelyn was in the hospital with him, but she was on a landline at a hotel near UCLA, and her sister, Vicky, my friend, and her sister was staying with Kevin. So she called on her cell phone to her sister's cell phone at the hospital. And so it was kind of a jumbled mess. She was like, Kevin wants to do an experiment. And all of a sudden, I don't know, but Kevin was in a coma. You know, she said the sister, Vicky, reported that they tucked him in for the night. And she, when Jocelyn called, it was dark, and so she went to turn on a light, and when she turned around, she said Kevin had his hand extended towards Vicky.
No.
And he took her hand. Yeah, it's in the book, the description. Well, and he took her hand, and he grasped her hand. And so Jocelyn's talking to Vicky, and she's saying, tap his finger, and Vicky's like, I don't, you know, she's like, what's going on? Because she doesn't know the first part. And anyway, and Kevin's communicating, hey, I can do it, I can do it. And Jocelyn's like, what's he doing, Vic? What's he doing? So it's like the crazy telephone game, quite literally. But basically, he realized that he was, that what his ingenious thing was, is he sent a, used his brain, if I'm not dreaming, then tap my finger. I thought that he wanted somebody to tap him, but what he did was more ingenious, because when he grabbed Vicky's hand, he used his finger to tap her hand really quickly. So it was like, I'm going to use my brain to send my body a message to tap my finger, which, you know, from the outside was, let's tap his finger. But no, and once he realized, I believe, that he could do that, that he was in control of his body, then that proved to him that he wasn't dreaming. And then he roused himself out of this 26-day coma. Now, Jocelyn can tell you it wasn't like, what's your favorite line to describe that, Jocelyn?
It's not like he sat up the next day and asked me for a cup of coffee, you know, but you wouldn't have expected that, but he woke up in a way that he hadn't before.
And he did speech therapy, right? He was
Would you like me to expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, please.
So he, after this tap my finger, he said he was going to tap his finger, and then he said, okay, I'm going to stop. And then we said to Vicky, what's he doing? And she said, he stopped. And then he said, okay, I'm going to do it again. So he did that a few times. Then he said, okay, now I know I'm not breathing. Maybe I can get myself out of this. And so, you know, I ran back to the hotel when the writing was over, because I thought, okay, yay, he's going to wake up. And like I said, it's not like he sat up and asked me for a cup of coffee the next day, but he was able to, when the doctors come in, they say, okay, Kevin, can you raise your right thumb and your left thumb? And he could move your left foot and your right foot. And he could. And then he was able to start saying words. And the speech therapist came in and asked him, you know, what's his favorite musician? And he could say it. And what did he like to eat? And it wasn't like a back and forth conversation with me, but he was waking up. And to the point that, you know, at this point, he was, since he'd been comatose, UCLA hadn't wanted to, like, entertain rehab or anything, because, you know, you can't do rehab with someone who can't even follow a command. But after this writing, he roused himself up enough that they reconsidered it and took him, because they thought he was improving, which he was. It was funny. The things that would come out of his mouth about UN presence in Gaza and things like that, I'd have the TV on, he'd make a little comment about something like that. But he came out of the coma. I mean, not completely like you and I are talking, but light years from where he had been before.
How astounding. And boy, what does that tell you? That a coma patient just believes they're in a dream state. So they're inadvertently kind of losing themselves, because they don't realize that they're not there. But how weird is it? I mean, he was in the ultimate lucid dream, right? He thinks he's dreaming, and he's so aware that he thinks he's dreaming that he's putting himself through tests to try to figure out what's reality and what's not.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, and he's getting the message in from her that the difference is that apparently my gift doesn't just, you know, help one-way communication, but it helped him hear her. And he'd say, well, how can I hear you now so loud? And that's not unusual. So apparently that conduit helped facilitate the communication in both directions. So she's the one that gave him the message. She said, I wish it was that you were dreaming, but you're not dreaming. And then she was telling him the list of all the things that had gone on. And think about us. When we're dreaming, unless it's a scary dream, do you actively do anything to wake yourself up out of a dream? We just dream, and we just think, well, I'm dreaming. Like, there's a place in us that's okay with that whole dream concept. If it's a frightening dream, then we may, you know, wake ourselves up or something. But mostly, you and I, our whole lives, we dream, and we wake up. We don't have to do anything intentional about that. But he did, because she told him he was in a coma, that he wasn't dreaming. You know, she got a message into his state of consciousness. Hey, wake up. So.
That's beautiful. Once you've kind of crested this other realm and you've helped to break this out. Now, Jocelyn, I mean, to come in from being a non-believer to this, I mean, this is a pretty radical wave to ride. And from the first conversation with Catherine to your husband coming out of a coma, how long a period of time are we talking?
Oh, that the next day. I mean, I came back to the room and he was more alert. And then the next morning the doctors came in. I go, I think you're going to see a change. And they just, you know, it was like, because I'd say, I mean, it was because there was a huge change. Squeeze my hand, hug me, you know, everything, just words. I mean, he hadn't, you know, there was, you know, he was in a coma and then he wasn't. I mean, he wasn't well, you know, and he'd had a lot of brain surgeries and he was, you know, obviously sick and still had the primary condition, brain cancer, and he had a hole in his head, a big one, you know, but he was definitely waking up. So much so that they agreed to send him to rehab.
And he comes through on this. Now, did you say, did he have memory of this dream state once he was out of the coma?
You know, I never asked him if he remembered that after the fact, because we were just on to the next thing. You know, I didn't say, hey, remember when you said you were dreaming? Do you, it's funny. We didn't really go back and, you know, we were just at this point moving forward. But there were other things that was kind of funny. I think, like, when you were talking about, do you think in the coma people can kind of leave their body and have awareness of things that are not right near them? And there was an event like that. That's, you know, explained more in our book, but where I was, when he was been waking up and he'd been awake for a few days. And in fact, then they moved us out of the ICU because he wasn't in a coma anymore. And I had gotten this joke kind of culturally insensitive joke, but I passed it along to people because it was kind of funny in a time of not funniness. And I had sent it to Catherine because, you know, Catherine and I had stayed in contact after the first writing because, of course, she wanted to know how he was doing. And so I had gone out in the gotten this email and forwarded it to Catherine. And then I went in the hallway to call her and they were changing his sheets and stuff. And I was in the hallway and I had a conversation with Catherine about this joke. And she was asking me how he was doing. And we talked about that. And then we talked about the joke and ha, ha, ha. And then I go back in the room. And he said, and this is the day of our anniversary, which was about a week, exactly a week after the first writing. And he said, you know, he believes in you, Jocelyn. And I said, who, Kevin? And he said, Jesus. And the reason that's significant was because the joke was about, it was a Jesus joke and a play on words, but it was a Jesus joke. And when I went back in the room, he didn't know I had gotten this email. He didn't know I had forwarded this email to these people. I was out in the hallway talking to Catherine about this joke, And when I came back in, he said, you know, he believes in you, Jocelyn. And I was stunned because it was related to this joke. And I thought, well, you know, we were always really in sync. We had the kind of marriage that I realize now pretty much most people don't have. We just were really always very connected, and we always finished each other's sentences. And I'd say something and he'd say, how'd you know I was just thinking about that? Or, you know, he'd say something and I'd just been thinking about that. So we were always really in sync. And so I just attributed it to that. But in a later writing, there's a whole discussion about from Kevin about communicating through the heart and about consciousness and how we really communicate with each other. And in that, he basically said he was, you know, wired into what I was feeling and thinking in this, you know, state. It's very, very, very.
Because he said that he, to clarify, unfortunately, his getting better was short-lived, and then he went back into a coma, and the cancer was going everywhere, and so he was going to be discharged to come home, because Jocelyn was going to bring him home to take care of him, and I woke up and got the nudge that I needed to go down to UCLA and do an in-person session, and which is sometimes the case. I went down there, much to her protest, and by this time he was completely unconscious again. And that's when he told her he could hear. So he was back in a comatose state, and he said, yeah, you know, I can hear your heart. Your mind says this, but your heart says that. So he was really piped in to her, so in his state of consciousness, again, kind of playing back to your original question, he was also able to intuit at a much greater level what she was thinking and feeling in specifics, not just in like, I know you're sad, baby, but real specifics.
His soul seems to be in tune with this entire experience. You've connected with him in a way that, you talk about how close you were, that you could finish off each other's sentences. This is a remarkable, true touching of souls to have been able to share this moment in the last times of his life, to know that the soul transcends and that the human element lives on beyond the physical form, Jocelyn. Is that something that you just keep with you every day? Has it been something that you feel the pull, obviously, with sharing your story openly in this book, but to share with others and get that message out?
Well, yes, and he's still with me. He sends me signs all the time. Catherine calls them divine synchronicities. I'm a lot simpler than she is. I get signs from him all the time that he is still with me, and I know it, and I know he's still with me, and I know when I die, I'm going to be with him again. We're kind of skipping all over the story, not really staying in the order of it, but I know I'm going to be with him again, and I know that the love that he had for me and that I have for him is still there.
I mean, that's one of the most important lessons anybody can take away from this. And again, we are kind of skipping over parts of the book, folks, because I want you to read the book, Beyond Ever After, A Heart-to-Heart Journey Through Death and the Afterlife, Catherine Weisenberg and Jocelyn Montanaro coming together to share this very impactful story. Many of you, like me, searching for the truth, the understanding of what does death mean and what does life after death mean. We'll talk more about that in just a few moments here on Beyond the Darkness. Tim, I bet we have a call coming on today's show. You care to take that wager?
Oh, I'll take that wager.
Oh, really? Remember, I can actually see these. It was an unfair bet, Tim. But you know what's not an unfair bet?
What's that?
working with betonline.ag. We've been doing it. We're in week 13. Tim, how did we do last week in our picks? We picked five games. How many did we get right last week?
The hand is hot, Dave. 4-1.
Four and one. Games picked correctly, Tim.
Yeah.
Out of five games. This is how Tim Dennis is a multimillionaire, folks.
Not a multimillionaire.
Pet Rocks and Tamagotchi, good investments, and now he just keeps parlaying it into purchasing more and more with betonline.ag. He's making millions, I've been told.
I wish I was.
Yeah, you should be.
I should be.
You've been running hot. You've picked, I think, in the last like 5 weeks, you've missed like three games.
I've been pretty darn good the last 3 weeks. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not gonna lie. I've been betting, following your lead, and I made a few bucks.
Have you?
I made a few bucks. Yeah. A few bucks. Yeah. So it's not bad. Huh. Once in a while, I go a little rogue and I try to make my own bet, and then I remember I should just let Tim continue to make the bets, because that's what we should do. Well, we're at week 13. And it's time to check in on our betonline.ag. Remember, folks, we want to see you play along with us. So go ahead, sign up, and go to betonline.ag. And if you're going to do that, make sure that you use promo code podcast1 for a 50% sign-up bonus. Betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts, will help you. Whether it's NFL challenges, college football, MLB, NBA, National Hockey League stuff, whatever you want to bet on, they've got a line. They've got it available for you. Tim, we've been battling it out with Corolla, but we're slowly clawing our way up the rungs.
Ah.
You know, it's always, you know, he takes two steps forward and we're one and, you know, an eighth behind him.
Yeah.
But we're slowly catching up. Mm-hmm. The Stone Cold Steve Austin. I stopped worrying about that buffoon, Tim. I just have full faith in you.
Aw.
Yeah. Full bet Tim Dennis. Stone Cold Steve Austin and full bet Tim Dennis. Head-to-head contact. And Tim's been knocking him down. He's been holding this guy down for a three-point pin. Is that how you call it, Tim, in wrestling?
A three-count, Dave.
It's three-count pin.
Yeah.
That's what Tim's been doing. And we're gonna give him a chance now. Now, a couple of the games have already passed, and you were right. You picked who to win what, Tim?
Dave, I'll tell you, they had me sweating until the very end of the game. Who would have thought that there would have been a third-string quarterback for the Lions that would have done well? But we picked the Bears over the Lions on Turkey Day, and it turns out that Mitch Trubisky still had a little bit in the tank. And so we got one down already. We're already one up for the weekend.
It wasn't even like their third choice backup quarterback for Detroit. Did I hear this right? Like the third quarterback got injured on the way there, and they literally had to call this guy up from their practice squad to play that day?
No. He is the third string quarterback.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's the third stringer.
Maybe I misunderstood in my turkey drunken haze and OD on gravy and cranberry sauce, Tim. That might have been what was going on.
But yeah, he played. He was a starter at Purdue, and they had a little bit of tape on him, but they didn't know too much about him, the Bears, that's for sure. But they ended up getting the win. It was probably the most impressive game of the day, which wasn't saying much.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah. It was a good game though. But you got one out of the chute. We've already got right. So what are our other four picks for this weekend? What should people be banking their money on right now, Tim?
All right, Dave. Well, there is a game. There's a game out there which some people may say, "Oh, that's a slam dunk, Tim. That's a slam dunk." I don't know. The Bengals are at home, and they're pretty sad, Dave. And they're going to continue to be sad because we picked the Jets over the Bengals. The Jets are not the greatest team in the world either, but hey, someone's got to win this one. So Jets over the Bengals, that's your first one for this weekend. And then our lock of the week. This is the solid gold lock it down. This is a guarantee. You've got those, I know you can't say red hot Redskins because they essentially have only won two games this year, one of them being last week. The Redskins are at home. They're taking on the Carolina Panthers. They had a close one against the Saints last week in which the Saints just barely won that one at the end. The Panthers, though, they actually are at home, and they've got the Redskins. Look for the Panthers to bounce back in a lock. They're going to win this one 31-17. Be sure to, that's your lock game of the week. So again, Panthers over the Redskins, 31-17. Next game we've got, the Packers are at the Giants. If there's a gimme game in the NFC North this week, this is it. Look for the Packers to rebound after losing to the 49ers last week. They'll beat the Giants in New York this week. So you've got so far the Jets, the Panthers, and the Packers. And finally, the huge matchup. We're taking a chance on this one this week, Dave. This is the one that we're going out on the ledge with. The big, big, big game in the NFL this week is those red-hot Baltimore Ravens at home taking on the San Francisco 49ers, who are also red-hot. Someone's got to lose in this one. The Ravens are at home, and you've got Lamar Jackson at quarterback, and this kid threw, what was it, 6 touchdown passes on Monday night?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm telling you, Dave, I don't see the Ravens dropping this one at all. The Ravens win at home against the 49ers. So Jets, Panthers, Packers, and Ravens. Remember, the Panthers are a lock, 31-7. Those are your picks for this week.
That's it. The psychic amongst us has spoken, folks. You want the best in paranormal talk radio? Then go with Psychic Tim's Predictions Weekly and see how they parlay out for you. Now, listen, if we win and we win big in a week, meaning that we picked all 5 and our point spread was closer than anybody else's, well, then we're awarded $500 to give out to listeners of our show that are playing along on betonline.ag. So Tim's been hitting. He's been hitting, and a couple weeks ago we picked all 5, but our spread was just off by a little bit, and we didn't win that challenge. But you never know. This could be your week. So remember, if you're betting along on betonline.ag, use podcast1 for your 50% sign-up bonus, and then let us know. And if we win all 5, we may be able to award $100 to 5 of our favorite fans that are playing along with us. Plus, there's a $5,000 season-long charity contest going on. It's been a lot of fun for us. I hope you guys are enjoying it as well. Keep watching hashtag SportsNetChallenge on Twitter for updates and be a part of the conversation. BetOnline.ag. Use promo code PODCAST1 for your 50% sign-up bonus. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. Ladies, this is a deeply impactful story. I'm so glad that you came together to share this. Jocelyn, was there ever any hesitation on your part to want to make public your story?
Yes.
In all caps and underlined.
What shook it loose for you to come forward and do this then?
Well, it's a good thing we have a long time with you, but I decided to have a year of personal growth and development, and instead of setting a New Year's resolution to lose 10 pounds and, you know, eat better. And Catherine got a nudge from Kevin, we now know, to take me to a Mary Morrissey conference. And it's a self-help thing. And I thought, oh, brother, and because that's how I am.
Jocelyn will tell you she doesn't speak spiritual. She's at the shallow end of the pool.
Oh, yeah.
Not
I still am.
Deep at all.
You know, I still am, Dave. I mean, I don't, you know, this is for me just a really practical, you know, impactful personal experience. I mean, the spiritual implications that Catherine lays out in the book are, of course, the most significant things. But for me, this is just my story with my husband. You know, it's a personal thing to me. But the story means so much for everyone else because of what it means. You know, for me, it's just my husband, you know.
Right, but it's not just oh, we had this great cruise where we got to swim with dolphins. You transcended the life between lives and shared moments. I mean, that's
you are very
pragmatic about it, but it's like, holy crap, woman, you dealt with life, death, and the in between and after. It's astounding to those of us listening.
Well, and the idea is that's how all this God work is that when you have a total stranger relaying and sharing information, maybe of something you did that morning, something your loved one said to you on their deathbed that only you were there, when you have that ability to have a direct experience of knowing that there's some other reality that's bigger than you that's being reported back to you in these loving and kind ways, it is a transformative experience. Her experience with her husband was transformative. But any time that you say, this can't be real, I know this person only knows my name is Mary, and she knows nothing about me, and yet this, then I know that I have to, I say like the walls on people's reality just get blown off, the doors, the kind of thing that you're describing, that transformational energy, because that proves to us we are not in a linear reality, that there is such a greater reality. And once I believe that door's cracked open even a little bit, we see perspective so much different, and we're so much more open as individuals to receive our own experiences of wonder and connection and the afterlife and God connection and spirit. I don't think that anything I do is so unique. I mean, I know it is unique, but I believe that all of us have this capability, but it's opening to it. And when you get cracked open, and this book is about really Jocelyn's cracking open and all about the spiritual context and perspective that I lay on in my work with hundreds and hundreds of people about that we are in an expanded universe. We're not in our contracted little realities. It breaks you apart, and you're transformed. That doesn't mean that people aren't like, oh my God, what's going on? But it's loving, and it's amazing. And once shows like yours, once we have enough vision for the possibility, then we will notice things on the periphery in our own day-to-day lives that we may never have noticed because we're looking at the pinhole in front of us, thinking that was all reality was.
Jocelyn, that's beautifully said, but Jocelyn, how soon after he came out of his coma did you end up losing your husband?
We went in for the surgery on July 10th and he died September 7th. So he came out of his coma on, August 5th. That was the day, I believe, the first writing. And then we had a second writing, after that, where Catherine, as she was saying, actually came down to UCLA. And in that writing, I had been making plans to take him home. I wasn't going to send him to a skilled nursing facility, which is what they recommended. And Catherine, as she was saying earlier, got the nudge that she needed to come back down there and do another writing. And I didn't want her to do that because I was coming home the next day. And I said, you know, you don't need to do that. We're coming home tomorrow. We can do it then. And she said, no, I got to come down now. And I thought, if she feels like she has to come down, there's something that someone needs to tell me that's probably not very good. And so she came down and we did the second writing where he said, I'm not going to make it and don't take me home. And I want you to call the hospice facility and take me there. And I said, no, I'm taking you home. And he said, no, you're taking me there. And we went back and forth on it. And I finally relented and we took him there and he died a week later. So once he knew, he was just kind of waiting for me to accept it more. And in all the writings, as Catherine could probably speak to this better than I can, a lot of Kevin's focus is not having me be mad at God and not blaming him, that death wasn't a failure, even though of course to me, it felt like a tremendous failure. I mean, I say this in the book, but I don't think I'm a control freak. Although I've been told I am, but I don't think. Ha ha! I know.
Catherine.
You don't have to be psychic to know that one. I'm just kidding.
Okay. It's okay. Sorry. But I like to control what I can. I mean, who doesn't? And things in my life that couldn't be fixed, by either my will or my intelligence were so frustrating to me, because most things, you know, unless they're consequences of the decision, you know, your own bad choices, you have some control over how things go. You know, I mean, people who, you know, end up in prison, usually it's because they did something wrong. It's not like they were just some innocent person in the wrong place at the wrong time. We have the ability to kind of control our lives around us. And Kevin dying was so out of my control. I couldn't take it. And so anyway, he, said, no, take me to Serenity House. That's the hospice facility in Santa Barbara. And so I agreed to do that. And he died a week later there. So,
and in the book, he's able to, just like he was able to converse with Jocelyn on those two occasions, I asked Jocelyn, would you like me to come to hospice and see if he wants to say something? And go ahead. Jocelyn,
where are you gonna? Well, and of course, I just thought, okay, well, if she says she needs to come, I don't know what that beep is. I'm sorry about that. When she said, you know, do you want me to come? I thought, okay, well, yeah, because, you know, each other time, I thought, well, of course, you know, yes, of course, come. How about tonight? And so she did. She came that night, and then he had my children were there, and he had a long conversation with them, kind of said their goodbyes and told them about why he lived his life the way he did and why he made the choices he did and what his credo was and how he wanted them to all be going forward, because he knew that it would be very hard. And he, you know, encouraged everybody to be gentle and loving with each other and not blameful. And, you know, because, you know, death brings out a lot of, you know, all kinds of emotions in people. And it's hard on families, especially when, you know, my youngest son had just turned 13, when Kevin died. And, it was complicated. And so he had another writing where he was able to tell them goodbye, and they were able to talk to him. And it was funny, in that writing, one of my kids did the same thing I did. You know, Dad, I don't really know that this is you. And so there's something really embarrassing that happened at this. And you know, if you tell me what it is, then I'll believe it. And of course he did. And they're just like, oh, you know, that changed that whole conversation, because they did the same thing. They asked the test question, he answered it, and then they were all on
two lawyers, lawyer kids. Yeah, yeah, talk about the Inquisition. You know, it's a good thing God's there, right? It's like, okay, no problem. So.
Yeah, they were, you know, it's funny. They weren't, not funny, but they weren't easy on Catherine when she walked in that room. They were not really happy. I had done the other writings. They didn't believe about it because they hadn't had the experience. And they thought that Kevin wouldn't have wanted me to do it. But once we did it with them and, you know, they all had the same experience I did.
And right, to have that, again, being very profound, as children, losing one of your parents is heartbreaking enough. But then to get kind of a chance to say goodbye, to have these moments, that had to be pretty remarkable for them as well. And do you, now, again, knowing how we are as humans, we may be skeptical, but we also want that one last chance. Do you ever feel that maybe you give too much credit, that maybe it was just the mind or the heart wanting what it believed to be right?
No, absolutely not. Because if only because of the specificity of the conversations, and you'll have to read the book. I mean, it's just like you and I are talking, and there's no way my heart could will, no matter how controlling I used to be. Stop laughing. There's no way my heart could will her to know information that she couldn't know. So that's why I know it's not possible, but it's just my wishful thinking.
And Kevin's brother had died of the same brain tumor that Kevin died at of a 59. How old was his brother? 19 or something?
17 when he died.
17. And in that hospice writing, he talks about that and how his brother, having that experience as a young man, which you alluded to, changed, that he then went forward to live for both of them. And I asked Jocelyn afterwards, I said, did Kevin talk about this with you? Did you know these things? She said, well, I knew his brother died when he was, you know. But he really, the kind of thing that you want to impart to your loved ones, and I always say, let's do it now. He got the blessing of being able to have that time to say those things to his children in a way that many never will get. But the time to do it's now, today, you know, right in this moment.
Right. No, I firmly agree. It's you make the best of it now and not have to wait for those moments to pass.
Most people... Go ahead.
She's had a lot of subsequent talks from him, with him, a lot of sessions. We've done more after he was deceased, and 6 actual writings are in the book, but there have been many more to follow, and he knows what they're doing. He can give Jocelyn the heads up. He is very aware of things that are going on in their lives, which also, you know, I mean, I'm not hovering with my drone over their house. No way of knowing what's going on. And that's been very helpful. I think, Jocelyn, don't you say you kind of feel in a way, not in a real active way, you're still co-parenting with Kevin.
Yes. Catherine said there's 6 writings in the book. One of them is the first writing we had after he died. But in subsequent writings, he would say things like, you know, I'm so happy that Will picked up the guitar, you know, because he loved to play the guitar. And, you know, or commenting about, you know, looking at colleges or just, you know, it's just, you know, he's around.
In specifics, and though.
Very specific. Yeah.
Jocelyn, can I ask then, how do you move on with your life then? Are you forever married to this man? And please understand, I don't mean this dismissively or like, oh God, are you still stuck with him? I just like in the concept of, you know, some people will move on. They mourn, they start a new life, maybe fall in love again and have another life like that. I mean, your husband is still a part of your life on a regular basis. How does that affect you?
You know, it's in the book. He encouraged me to, when the time was right, to move on if that ever, you know, hit me. And I did have another relationship after he died years later. But I got to say, in my head, I was always, you know, I'll always feel married. And I will. And
when you were seeing somebody, is he popping in going, hey, no. And what are you letting him wear my slippers for? I mean, was it that kind of conversation or?
You know, it's when I started dating someone, I didn't have a writing then because I didn't think it was fair to talk to my husband about a boyfriend. It just didn't seem like the, you know, the right thing to do, or fair. And so, I've gotten some information about some of my choices, but, that's a complicated question. It really is because I do still
sorry about that.
No, it is. No, it's okay. Because I struggle with that. You know, I'd like to have a good relationship in my life. I mean, I'm not that old. Well, sort of. I'm 58. But it'd be,
that's,
you know,
not
I'd
that
like,
old.
Well, I, you know, 58 is the new 48, but I'd like to have, you know, I'd like to have a long-term, you know, loving relationship, but it's such a high bar to set. I mean, Kevin and I we had one of those marriages that people just don't have. At the time I was happy, but I didn't realize how lucky and blessed I was. I mean, I knew I got the total better end of the deal. And I knew that he was light years, you know, in terms of quality of character than I am. And I'm not, you know, being self-deprecating, but Kevin was just a quality, the top quality human being. And he's going to be a hard act for someone to follow, you know, and that's just the truth.
Well, and, so really and even though you've grieved the passing, you haven't ever felt that complete break. So that's got to be a unique experience as well. He's still there for all intents and purposes. He's still there.
He is. And, you know, it's funny. I still have conversations with him. And often, like I was saying earlier, a squirrel is involved, which is there's a story about that in the book. And, yeah, he's very much still there. And I know when I'm making mistakes, which often as humans we do, but we know we're doing them. We still do them. At times I just think, oh my God, Kevin, I'm sorry. You know, I'll do better next time. And, I still very much feel his presence. And I, in the writing after he died, you know, I asked him if we were going to get to be together again, because I had this, you know, fear that I had, you know, pissed off a God that I didn't even really believe in, because I was so angry when he died. I could cry. I was just so angry. And it's taken a long time to, you know, get over that. And still, I still have times where I just walk around and go, really? Really, God? Why him? Why him? And I get pissed off all over again. But it's okay, because I know God still loves me and forgives me my mental cancer. And I get to be with Kevin, which for me is it. You know, I know that I get to be with Kevin. And for me, that's all I ever wanted. And to know that we would be together again, because I never wanted to be anywhere than with him. So when this, and he said it'd be like a blink of an eye, and that really is good for me, because, you know, the days are long at times, and, you know, I've got kids and they have challenges and they have victories, and, you know, I still have to live life and everything it throws at me by myself. You know, I don't have a partner anymore, and the partner I had was such a great partner. It's not like I lost a crappy partner, you know, I lost a great partner, and that's hard. And a lot of the reason I you asked earlier, and if I was hesitant to write this book, and I was because it's a very personal story. I'm a very private person. I don't like to feel or appear vulnerable. And I, reading it now, I think, oh my God, why did I write that? And I think had I really thought in my head that people would be reading it, I mean, I feel kind of like I'm naked running down the street, but it was, for me, writing the book was this, it was like how I grieved. Like, I love denial and compartmentalization. And after Kevin died, I just went into full, you know, denial, compartmentalization. I couldn't deal with it, you know, cause I just had life and laundry and mail and kids. But when I started to write this book, and I remembered everything about how I felt and what we went through, and a lot of the writings are recorded, so I could hear it in real time, you know, me crying, me sighing, Catherine's inflection, because when she reads it out loud as she's, you know, receiving the energy, even the inflection in her tone is similar to Kevin's. It sounds like a woman Kevin talking to me. That sounds weird. But it's true. It's just everything, the pauses, it's remarkable. So for me, writing the book was kind of my grief process, which I think is part of the reason why he encouraged me to do it. But for me, the main reason I wanted to do it was, well, one, I was so grateful to Catherine. I was happy to help get this out there, because what she offers is just so wonderful and life altering. But Kevin had always wanted to take a missions trip, and especially after he was sick. But, you know, he was weak and not well. You know, brain cancer is pretty debilitating, and he never got to do that. And I feel like the messages in this book are the missions trip that he was never able to take. And I feel a real responsibility to get it out there, because I want him to kind of complete what he thought part of his life purpose was, you know, which is to, you know, have people understand what he felt he understood. So
that's the book when you is asked written me. In a four-part narrative. So there's really four authors in this book. There's Jocelyn, there's Kevin, there's God, and there's me. So it's unique in this kind of four-part version of this story. And Kevin is very much alive and a character speaking for himself as himself and all the wonderful things she says about who he was and how he lived his life and how he explains what happened. There's a part in the book where he shares what happened when he died, what his experience was. So you really get the opportunity to meet this terrific man who is now got this ability through this book to impact life, to take that missions trip, like she said, because he's the star of the book. He's the, you know, he's the one that, because he never was afraid of dying. His whole main concern was helping Jocelyn come to terms with it and also having her not be angry with God and know the level of faith that he had and the level of belief that he had about where he was going and what was going to happen to him and how he wanted to help hold and love his family after he was gone, which, you know, is what we all want when we lose someone we love.
Yeah. Are you, you know, for people that are listening around the world right now, Jocelyn, that are fearful of death, fearful of what comes next, you have the ears of hundreds of thousands of listeners around the world right now. What would your message be to them?
Well, that's when people ask me what's my greatest takeaway from this whole experience is that I don't fear dying. I don't. I'd like to live to see my grandkids grow up. I have one right now, another on the way. I'd like to see my children grow up and get married and have families of their own. But I'm not worried about what's waiting for me. I'm not fearful about it. I feel really at peace with it, but not like it's something I have. Not like I've come to terms with something that's you know, scary or unpleasant. I just know, just at a visceral level, that it's not something to be feared, and I you know, seeing Kevin die and the experience he had at the moment of his death and then talking to him afterwards, I know there's nothing for me to fear. And when my mother was dying just in August, and actually at the same hospice facility that my husband was, and I had a completely different experience. I said, you know, Mom, I'm just going to stay with you for this month or however long it is. I'm going to sleep here and everything just like I did with Kevin. But I wasn't worried at all. And she wasn't didn't know if there was something or wasn't something. And it's funny, she would ask everybody but me because she knew what I thought. And I just said to her, you know, Mom, I'm not worried at all about what's going to happen to you. My job is just to make sure that you're not in any pain until you get there. And when you get there, you know, I'm going to be looking up and going, see, I told you so, you know, that there was nothing to fear. And I think being able to live life not fearing death makes you freer to really kind of live it. I mean, and I'm not talking about that you can go hog wild and be a bad person. Of course, what we do matters. Everything we do matters. In fact, it matters a lot. Our words matter. Our actions matter. You know, everything, it matters. But I don't sweat the small stuff. And I don't often sweat the bigger stuff because I know that I'm held in some pretty expansive, loving arms. And for me, it just gives me a peace that I never had before. And I'm just lucky. I'm just blessed and lucky that I've had this experience. I know I would have never felt this way if I, you know, hadn't. I mean, Kevin used to tell me, you know, I told him I was always waiting for my religious epiphany, where one day I would just be struck down and filled with that Holy Spirit he talked about all the time. And he wasn't, while he was a Christian, when he died, he had, you know, studied all the different religions and really thought that they were all essentially, you know, it was just like kind of a minutia thing. But he was definitely a Christian when he died. And I told him, I was just like waiting for my religious epiphany, you know, be struck down with the Holy Spirit. And he said, you know, you have to read and study the Bible to, you know, get there. And I was like, I don't want to do that. You know, I just wanted it to come to me. And then it did. That's the thing. I mean, I had my epiphany. I had my epiphany through this experience. And I'm so lucky and I'm so blessed. And I hope when people read the book, they have the same epiphany that I did. And while I know that most people aren't going to get the same direct experience that I've had, very few actually get it. I know that a lot of what you learn from life, you learn from watching somebody else. Like, you know, kid puts their hand on a hot stove and another kid sees it, they learn that a hot stove can burn you. You know, you don't have to have a personal experience to really believe something. And I hope from reading this book, people can believe what I now know to be true, just like I, you know that there's a sun in the sky.
Well, you just mentioned something I found interesting. You said it's the kind of thing that not everybody gets. Would they if they asked, or are some people, do you think, just kind of shut out from having these type of experiences?
Well, I had this experience because my sister introduced me to Catherine. I got this experience, and in a way, I got it the easy way. You know, my husband, he felt the same way, or even, you know, that I feel now from his own thoughts and studies and contemplation and listening to, you know, stories like this and radio shows like this. You know, he steeped himself in this because he wanted to have that peace that comes with knowing that there is more to this life than what we experience right now. And he always believed that. He was always searching it. And, you know, in the book, he says a comment that he was in this place that he'd been trying to touch his whole life. And that when he died, that's what he said. He goes, I realized I was in the place I'd been trying to touch my whole life. And so, you know, he got it. He got what he wanted. And I, by kind of default, from my, you know, getting to meet Catherine, got the experience, got to feel the same thing without having to really work for it, which is really in a way not fair, I just got it coming to me. But I'm grateful, but I feel also now an obligation to share it because it is life-altering and life-changing. And I would love all of your listeners to know what I know and feel what I feel and to experience, you know, Catherine's wisdom, you know, all these years of all these writings, I'm just the narrative in the story. I just have the story, but the real gems of the book are the spiritual and personal and life-changing implications it means for all of us. And Catherine is the one who, you know, very well lays that out because I certainly couldn't do that, you know? So I would, you know, encourage everyone to check it out.
Yeah, and that's what the God work does. It's transformative. And once you have your transformative experience or even reading someone else's writings, you understand there is so much more to our human souls that they are larger here. They're expanded in the afterlife, and that we're always connected to God, Spirit, Buddha, however your religious orientation, or if you have none, that there is this universal love, this field of energy that is palpable and always surrounding us. And, of course, when I work with people, it's like the red carpet rolls out and you're into the other realm and it is life altering. But we all have those opportunities for life altering moments and knowing that our spirits are so much greater our minds, the linearness to which we accept reality and compartmentalize and segment it, Jocelyn would have never been able to do this, believe this, have this experience if she wasn't repeatedly having the doors blown off and this separation of I am separate from my reality, I am separate from my reality. And it's kind of worn grooves, these ways in which we think that we are isolated onto ourselves, you know. And this, a story like this and the hundreds over that I've experienced, it makes this idea of oneness that people kind of say, oh, it's so, you know, it's oneness, it's all oneness. This is, well, really, yeah, there is, I would prefer no separation. There is no separation between us and these other opportunities, experiences, love. Love is eternal. Love always finds a way. It could be with your husband, with pets. I've had lots of pets come back and connect with their loved ones. All of that, so powerful. So it's...
Do you have people that will reach out to you that you just don't have the ability to connect with, Catherine? If they've
never had it not work.
Okay.
And what you and the deceased people are so much a smaller portion of the kind of work that I do. It's more the God writings, letting go of fear, dismantling limitations, obstacles, the way the thought process is, how consciousness works, all those vaster concepts, which are in the book kind of touched upon. But those are, I've never had it not work. There, it never not work. I never promise, you know, anything to anyone, because ultimately, it's not my product in the way of, you know, something else we might create in our lives. But no, the God energy is always available, and deceased people drop in, or deceased pets, or ancestors from, you know, 10 generations ago. I mean, the sky is the limit in terms of that. Once you let go of the linear way of understanding reality, then everything's kind of free game and accessible. So.
Well, I appreciate both of you very much for coming forth with this story. And I hope that our listeners, and I know they are legion, that are seeking answers and wanting some kind of connection to hear these stories. What you've shared with us today, amazing. The book, again, Beyond Ever After, a heart-to-heart journey through death and the afterlife. It's out and available. You can go to darknessradio.com, click on our link for the store. You'll see it open up into our Amazon store. You just click on it and go into our paranormal book section, and boom, all the books you hear featured on the program are listed right there for you in one comprehensive location. Make sure to rate and review all those authors after you read them as well. We also have a link up to Catherine's website, so you can find that on today's program. Jocelyn, is there a link or anything you'd like us to include of yours for the audience, or do you prefer just not to be bothered by the scores of people that are going to want to dive deeper?
Well, our book has a website.
Yes, our book has a website, and we're both on there. So, and I would encourage people to go to it. And so we have it's a joint website. It's for the book. So.
www.beyondeverafter.com.
Beyondeverafter.com. All right, we'll have that up on today's program as well.
And also, if people would like to share their own experiences, their own Beyond Ever After experiences, or connect with us, they can do that through our website. We have a submit your story option there that you can find on the website. Because I hope people just start dialoguing about their own experiences. It's kind of taboo. With your radio show, we're kind of outliers. So I'd like us to become more, you know, more all of us be able to share our own experiences, all your listeners, all our readers, and share the wisdom that we all have embedded in us. So
Well, thank you. Thank you both very much. And please, folks, again, support the great guests and authors that we have on our show by picking up their books, their projects, and helping to pass the word on about them by rating and reviewing them. That's it for this week. Remember, we'll be back again with more of the best in True Crime Talk Radio Tuesday with True Crime Tuesday. Watch The Holzer Files, another brand new episode, only a handful left, left on Travel Channel this Thursday night, 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central Time, and we've got another great story for you lined up with some evidence I think is going to really astound some of you. So make sure you check it out, The Holzer Files, for another brand new episode on the Travel Channel this Thursday. That's it for that guy. I'm this guy. You've been listening to that show. This is Beyond the Darkness.